This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Every year as we celebrate the holidays, we ask Murray Horowitz to drop by for one of his movie spectaculars. We've done Best Scrooge. We've done Dysfunctional Families. Today, we delve into the heart of the annual Party Archipelago, the intermittently joyful string of gatherings that begins with Thanksgiving and culminates... Well, hey, wait a minute. It's not over till we say it's over.
Toga! Toga!
So tell us which movie party you wish you could have attended. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. A little later, we'll remember some of the movie folk we lost in the last year. And if you'd like to send in a nominee for that, the email address again is talk@npr.org. Our favorite film buff, Murray Horowitz, joins us here in Studio 3A. A happy post-Hanukkah and merry eve of Christmas Eve.
Happy holidays to you, Neil.
And, of course, there are movie parties we wouldn't want to attend, but that's not exactly what we're talking about today.
No, that's true. And I also realize one of them, many of them, may be taking place even as we speak. It's December 23rd, and it may well be that beneath the sound of our voices right now, there's some sad party going on with cheap wine and plastic cups, and people are pretending to be jolly at their office.
But these are movie parties, but parties. We're not talking dinner parties here.
We did Best Meals, yeah. But we're not talking about My Dinner with Andre or about
Babette's Feast. Or, yeah.
But what we're really, or Macbeth's Banquet either, but also... On that line, we're not talking about parties we wouldn't have wanted to go to, disaster parties, unless it was a fun disaster.
The big party on the Titanic,
right?
Going down,
exactly. That's right. Right, or Poseidon Adventure, which they're singing "Auld Lang Syne" as the thing sinks. No, we're looking for places, movie parties that you wish you'd been at.
Yes.
You looked at that film and said, "Damn, I would love to have gone to that party."
And there are, it's also interesting as parties are introduced. They're a great way to introduce us to characters.
That's right. They function in different ways. First of all, they're great backgrounds for things. They're just festive and everybody's having a good time. They do sometimes move the plot along, and we've got some examples of that. So, and as you said, it's a great way to introduce characters. We've got great examples of that, say All About Eve. And sometimes it introduces character in a certain way. It introduces a certain boldness. So if you think of some of those teen parties like 16 Candles, almost any John Hughes movie.
Right. There's one in every John Hughes movie,
right, that's true. But where the nerdy guy or the nerdy girl sheds the nerdiness and, steps up. I do have to say one thing, that there are... I'm not going to be Scrooge, We're not dealing with the consequences of parties here. So, we remind our listeners that if you're going to watch any of these parties on film, please watch responsibly.
Watch responsibly and cut yourself off after two.
That's right. You'll get sick easy.
They are also, as you go back in time from black and white silence to the most glorious 3D spectaculars of today... I don't know if there was any parties in Avatar. Anyway, they are triptychs of an era.
That's right. No, this is one of the things I love about this category, which is admittedly too broad, and one of these days maybe we should do, Neil, like best movie prom or best nightclub scene,
right.
But one of the things about it is they're different eras, different parties. I mean, nowhere are movies more effective as a kind of cultural history. I mean, there are big differences among parties in the 60s, the 80s, the roaring 20s, as you mentioned, and you can all see them in their movie portrayals.
There is, for example, I'm not sure anybody's going to nominate this one, so we're gonna plunge ahead here. This is the Depression-era gulf between rich and poor, 1936, My Man Godfrey, William Powell, and Carol Lombard. She stages a charity scavenger hunt.
Take a look at the dizzy old gal with the goat.
I've had to look at her for 20 years. That's Mrs. Bullock.
I'm terribly sorry.
How do you think I feel?
All right, Angelica.
Oh, the unmistakable Eugene W. Paulette.
Eugene Paulette, Neil.
Yeah, Eugene Paulette. If I do that voice, I won't be able to talk for the rest of the afternoon.
My favorite was when he was in The Adventures of Robin Hood, which I think saw some kind of medieval party
Friar
in it, too.
Friar Tuck, yes.
Where he said, well, I've got to talk to the Alcalde or something. No, that's Zorro. That's
Zorro,
The Adventures of Zorro. I got my adventures mixed up. But, no, it's absolutely true that is one of those parties that kicks off a plot, because based on that scavenger hunt, they have to find the forgotten man, and they find William Powell.
And, of course, it illustrates the gap because, we have these charity balls, but, of course, there's never money left over for charity.
That's right. It's true. It's true.
Let's see. We get some listeners involved in the conversation. Again, we'd like your nominee for Best Party that you would have loved to attend that you saw in a movie. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We'll start with Jerry. Jerry calling us from Tallahassee.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay. This isn't really kind of a party, I guess, but it wasn't posed as one. But it does speak to money left over and the gap between rich and poor. The party that's sort of held at the end of It's a Wonderful Life.
That's sort of an impromptu party. People just keep arriving.
Right, right, right.
But exactly. But
Jerry, there is an amazing party in It's a Wonderful Life, and one that I would have wanted to have attended.
But that would have been the best prom.
That is on in the prom, but
it
it's
is
a party
prom.
Where the dance floor opens up
and everybody
ends
falls
up plunging
into the swimming pool.
Right.
Yes.
It's also, even though I think it's set, that scene is set in like the teens or the 20s, and they're looking back at it, it's a very 1940s idea of a party. They're almost jitterbugging.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Those are the best.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Let's see if we go next to, this is Anna. Anna with us from Wilmington in Delaware.
Yes, hello. The dinner party in Big Night, where the competing restaurants, one of them erroneously says that he can get, I think it was Mario Lanza to come over. So they made this incredible meal, and of course, they spent all their money, and of course, Mario Lanza didn't show up, but they had a party anyway afterwards.
It's actually Louis Prima, and we dealt with this when we dealt with best movie meals, and that's a meal I certainly would have wanted to have attended.
And who wouldn't want a meal with spaghetti and risotto?
It's true, but there's
party.
No, it's okay. It's just that's not. I mean, in terms of festivity, there was a kind of pall over that party, and it was the result of a double cross.
Anyway, thanks very much for the nomination. Let's see if we go next to, this is Jeff. Jeff with us from Toledo.
Hey.
Hi there, Jeff. You're on the air.
Well, excellent. I'd like to nominate two, if I can. First, PCU, a little comedy from the 90s on a college campus, and the party at the end of that movie where they had George Clinton right there in person. That would have been a blast to attend.
Well, I'm not familiar with that one.
It's true. Well, it's actually based on a real house, a fraternity house or something, at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. And it's a 1994 party. And as you say, it's kind of like the apotheosis of a college blowout.
And the greatest college blowout, well, we sort of telegraphed this one already, but the greatest college blowout, of course, is Animal House, 1978. Tim Matheson is the rush chairman of Delta Tau Chi. Eric Otter Stratton is now making his mark as a leader.
They're going to nail us no matter what we do. So we might as well have a good time. Toga, 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 toga.
The mantra which launched a thousand evenings playing Scrabble.
It's true. When I talk to people about, best movie party, that's usually the first one that people think of is the toga party in Animal House.
And let's see if we go next to this is Jim. And Jim with us from Charlotte.
Yes. I'd like to be at Connie Corleone's wedding party reception at the beginning of The Godfather.
I'm going to not say what I was going to say, but Jim, thanks very much for that. That is wedding party is it's a kind of party.
Well, we should ask Jim what he does for a living before answering this question, maybe.
Well, I'm retired, but I'm an Italian from Chicago.
Oh, all right.
I would have appreciated to have been invited to that wedding party, I'll tell you that.
You know, Jim, there are two big Catholic wedding parties that just at a certain point you got to say, to me, say enough already. One of them is that Corleone family wedding party, and the other one is in The Deer Hunter, the Polish wedding party goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Yeah. I forgot about that. Absolutely.
Thanks very much for the nomination, Jim.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Let's go next to this is Mark, and Mark's with us from Tampa Bay.
Yes, my nomination would be a party that actually takes up almost the entire movie, which is The Party starring Peter Sellers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Mark. I mean, there are a couple of party films where it's just about the party. There's a movie called Swingers. I guess in a strange way, you could say Saturday Night Fever is about the party that happens, you know, every night on the dance floor, but or at least every weekend. But
yes,
the party is amazing. The party is a Blake Edwards film, speaking of those who have passed away this year.
And more about him later.
And a virtuoso piece of work from Peter Sellers.
And
it would be hilarious. I would give anything to have been there and watch him just wreak havoc on that party.
Well, a lot of it was improvised. It was a very slim screenplay, according to Blake Edwards, and a lot of it was just made up on the spot, including, I think, Birdy Num Nums, one of his great lines.
Yes.
Thanks, Mark. Let's see if we go next to this is Nicole. Nicole with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
My the party that I wish that I had been able to go to, it happened before I was born. Breakfast at Tiffany's, Holly Golightly's apartment party.
This is George Peppard's Paul Varjak talking with Audrey Hepburn's Holly Golightly, and of course, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
This is some party. Who are all these people anyhow?
Who knows? The word gets out. You don't mind, do you, darling?
Yeah. Reinforcements.
The reinforcements being a case of scotch.
Yes.
And another Blake Edwards movie. So I guess it makes us think that the real party we wish we'd been at was something at Blake Edwards' house.
his wife could sing, as I understand. Thanks very much, Nicole.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. There is also an entire category of party which we can't play, Murray, on the radio.
That's true. I would say there are two. There are a lot of parties in films that are rated X, but also these are parties that I really wish I could go to, and maybe our listeners can help us out. But these are the silent movies in the 1920s where people are drinking hooch and dancing the Charleston, and I would have loved to have gone to those parties. I'll say this. There was one that I saw years ago, a comedy, where the title said The Morgue, .. And then the next thing you saw was, you know, a band playing something like this.
We're talking with Murray Horwitz, our favorite film buff. What's the movie party you most wished you'd attended? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Keep your toes tapping and your glasses full. We've got more movie parties when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We know, it's coming up on Christmas Eve. You've probably already been to a string of awkward office parties, or maybe you got dolled up for a batch that didn't quite deliver. Well, here at Talk of the Nation, the party never stops, and our favorite film buff Murray Horwitz is here. We're counting down to the best movie parties. What's the film celebration you would most like to have attended? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Of course, it's not just Christmas parties coming up. Of course, all the New Year's Eve parties, where key dramatic moments include a climactic declaration of love by Billy Crystal.
I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
You see? That is just like you, Harry. You say things like that and you make it impossible for me to hate you.
Oh, I'll have what she's having.
When Harry Met Sally. And, you know, New Year's Eve does become an important party for plot and character reasons. Is a favorite of mine with Carol Lombard and Jimmy Stewart called Made for Each Other, a kind of comedy melodrama. But also, you know, in those 1930s parties where everybody was in black tie or evening clothes, as they called it back then, Everybody seemed so elegant. And one of the most elegant was William Powell and Myrna Loy in The Thin Man.
And The Thin Man, well, here's a bit of a party and here's a bit of The Morning After.
Oh, Nicky, I love you because you know such lovely people.
Oh, I'm a hero. I was shot twice in the Tribune.
I read where you were shot 5 times in the tabloids.
It's not true. He didn't come anywhere near my tabloids.
Oh, patter like that is hard to come by.
Yeah, it is hard to come by.
Let's see if we can get another caller in on the conversation. Let's go to Anna Marie Anne Maria in Summers Point, New Jersey.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
If I had to choose, I would love to have been at the party that begins the movie, The Big Chill.
The Big Chill. That's a, it's a pretty good party.
You know, talk about a cultural artifact.
That's true. It was, I mean, I was trying to remember that party because somebody mentioned that to me just within the last hour or two. And I wondered if there wasn't, was there at the very beginning of the movie that kind of undercurrent of bad things to happen, or was the
there is, and in fact, if you recall, it begins with "I heard it through the grapevine,"
right?
Which, you know, that intro to that song is very sort of foreshadowing, you know.
Well, foreboding, sure, foreshadowing, or maybe foreshadowing foreboding.
Yeah, no, it's foreboding.
But
right.
with great music.
Great music. Thank you very much.
Thanks much, Anne Maria. Here's an email from Dorian, or Dorian, I'm not mispronouncing that. Great movie party. I wish I could attend Grace Kelly's engagement party in high society. Bing Crosby, Louis Armstrong, Frank Sinatra gallivanting in Newport with Grace, her diamond and buckets of champagne. Who wants to be a millionaire?
Well, that's outside, but there's Louis Armstrong and Bing Crosby performing Now You Has Jazz. And it's that is a very elegant, swanky party. In fact, Crosby and Sinatra sing a number written for that show. What a swell party this is.
This is, yes. Let's go to John. John with us from Stroud in Oklahoma.
I was thinking it would be a toss-up between two for me. I like the party at the end of Weird Science where the rocket ship gets summoned from below the ground and then motorcycle thugs show up. And then also the party at the end of Return of the Jedi with all the Ewoks, I think, would be pretty fun.
That would be all right. There was not a lot of dating opportunities at that party.
No.
Unless you were an Ewok, perhaps.
Princess Leia is there, but...
Yeah. I thought of some of those, John, those Star Wars movies, and I'm just not sure what's in those drinks. That's what bothers me. But you're right about Weird Science. Once again, a John Hughes movie where a party scene is de rigueur.
Thanks very much for the nominee. It's an adolescent movie, and that's a trope, finding the party of many of those films. Half the fun, though, the anticipation and being in the know, like this from the 70s period drama made in 1993, though, Dazed and Confused.
Right here. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what are you guys up to?
Oh, a little weed, you know. There may be a beer bus later on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Guess we'll see you around.
All right, check you later.
Bye. Later.
Almost reminiscent of American Graffiti.
Right. But in a way, even better. Party at the Moon Tower. And it's it really is the teen blowout.
The movie party I would most like to attend, Elizabeth in Connecticut emails, is the New Year's Eve party given by Katharine Hepburn in Holiday with Cary Grant. We mentioned Philadelphia Story. That's a Philadelphia Story, the origin of high society.
That's exactly
so,
right.
Exactly. A party from a movie I want to attend. Auntie Mame's famous line, live, live, live.
Yes, and exactly so. That's one of the great bashes blowouts of all time.
And let's see if we get another caller on the line. And let's go to Deborah. Deborah with us from Cincinnati.
Well, I'm glad you threw in some elegant ones because I was starting to feel a little lame. But I love the ambiance of the party in Meet Joe Black. I just think it's a summer starry night, and it's formal, and there's champagne flowing. It certainly doesn't hurt that Brad Pitt's there, but I just love the ambiance of that party.
That's true, and that's another you make a really good point, Deborah, because one of the things directors, I think, love party scenes. I mean, because they're kind of hard to direct. They're a challenge. You get to use various parts of the set that you might not otherwise have had value for you. There's a lot of activity. What's in the foreground? What's in the background? And it really helps you establish an atmosphere. And as you say, Meet Joe Black's a great example of that.
Thanks very much, Deborah. We're going to go to the other end of the elegant spectrum. This is from Midnight Cowboy, where John Voight answers questions from an artist filming the party.
Why are you laughing, Joe? You really a cowboy?
Well, I'll tell you the truth now. I ain't a for real cowboy, but I am one hell of a stud.
A very expensive stud, and I happen to be his manager.
Of course, Dustin Hoffman there as Ratso Rizzo. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, I'm so glad that you put that in, Neil, because I was looking for one of those parties that was a really kind of a mod 60s happening kind of party. There is a sort of infamous movie, but there are those of us who love it, with a Roger Ebert screenplay called Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. And that is sort of a nonstop 1960s substance abuse. abusing party.
And this, of course, is a famous Russ Meyer movie for those who are aficionados of his peculiar oeuvre. And it's a schlock romp beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
This is my happening, and it freaks me out.
Oh, it's a stone gas, man.
Pray we must make.
A stone gas man.
John Lazar, this is my happening and it freaks me out. People don't say that nowadays, folks.
The source of the immortal line, hey, you're not a guy, you're just an ugly broad.
That's right. Written by Roger Ebert, one presumes.
Let's see if we can go next to, this is Tom. Tom calling us from Ann Arbor.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Yeah, I would like to go to the party in the film The Slaves of New York. It was directed by James Ivory and it was Bernadette Peters' first film, and at the end she kind of has a party for all the people that she's met throughout the film. And just to be at a party with Bernadette Peters would be great. But
a party with Bernadette Peters would be great.
That's any time with Bernadette Peters is a party, I assume. But that's terrific, Tom. It was one unknown to me, and I'm going to have to check it out.
I'll have to check it out. Netflix will be deluged. Let's see if we go next to, this is Edith from Windsor Heights in Iowa.
Yes, I have a quirky party for you.
Oh, good.
In the movie Local Hero, it's theoretically a traditional Scottish ceilidh sing-along and dancing, except they've got a Russian sea captain singing karaoke songs from Texas and all kinds of quirky little business going on with the different characters, and I just think it's delightful.
It's a terrific movie.
Almost everything in any Bill Forsyth movie is delightful, and I'm really grateful to you, Edith, for bringing that one up. It would have been a fun party to attend.
And the scotch would be great.
The scotch would be great.
Doubtless.
Here's an email from Christy in Bridgeton, New Jersey. The costume party from An American Part in Paris. Did they really have parties like that? So fun. This, of course, where Gene Kelly falls hard for Leslie Caron.
You and I are going out tonight. I'm going to take you to the Art Students Ball. Have you ever been to one?
No.
You'll love it. It's jet-propelled New Year's Eve, and everybody in Paris will be there.
It's costume, isn't it?
Never mind. I'll take care of all that. Leave it to me.
Oh, you'd like to go just to watch him dance.
Would. And another one I'd like to go to, and it is one of those 1920s parties, is the one that Gene Kelly put into, and his partner Stanley Donen put into Singin' in the Rain, which again is a very important party from the standpoint of character and plot points. It's there where it's revealed by the producer that talkies are on the way and a lot of people are going to be out of business. And also that's where he finds out that Debbie Reynolds has been lying to him, and he has his encounter with Debbie Reynolds, I think, jumping out of a cake.
We have some tweets. This from Megan Bryan, the barn raising from the movie Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yep.
Big dance scene there. T. Boat Beecham, Risky Business. That's a terrific party.
That is. And not X-rated, but could have been in a different way.
Slightly different movie. Butterfly McGrew, The Party in the Party with Peter Sellers, and we mentioned that. Dan Rice, Great Gatsby party early in the film. Which version, though?
Well, it's right. There have been a lot of Great Gatsbys beginning right around the time that the novel was published in the 20s. There were at least one silent version. There was a famous version in 1949 with Alan Ladd, one in 1974 with a Francis Ford Coppola screenplay and Robert Redford, Mia Farrow. But this is one of the most important and famous parties in all of American literature. I guess you could say all of Gatsby's parties were. So, the Great Gatsby. I'm glad that it's been immortalized on Talk of the Nation.
And email from Linda also nominated that very same thing. The movie party I would most want to attend would have been the Masked Ball on board a Zeppelin and Cecil B. DeMille's Madam Satan of 1930. Singing, dancing, flaming drinks, not the best idea on board an airship. I would have thought the airship does crash at the end of the party, so I'd like to specify I want to attend the party as long as I had a parachute.
Right, and it's like the Masked Ball in the Silent of Phantom of the Opera in the Paris Opera House. It's this great, glorious, glittering party, one of the first color scenes in a movie. But then all of a sudden, the masked death shows up in the person of Lon Chaney, and that kind of puts a pall over the proceedings.
Over the events. I'd have to say the party I would have most liked to attend, had I been invited by Margaret Dumont, was in the honor of a certain famous African explorer.
Why, you're one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, and that's not saying much for you.
Captain Spaulding, Rittenhouse Manor is entirely at your disposal.
Well, I'm certainly grateful for this magnificent turnout, and now I'd like to say a few words. Hello? I must be going. I cannot stay. I came to say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going. La la.
La la.
Oh, it's great. And it's one of those Hollywood parties that we all want to imagine ourselves being at, where everybody raises a glass and starts singing in unison a great vocal arrangement. I always wanted to be at a party like that.
And, well, which one gets the Murray then?
Well, I have to say, of the ones that just hands down, these people are having a great time and I wish I were there, is in Emil Ardolino's 1987 film Dirty Dancing. And the party's set sometime in the early 1960s, but Jennifer Grey goes to the staff party and meets Patrick Swayze, and she's had this crush on him, and there's a deathless line in there. She says, "I carried a watermelon." But the Dirty Dancing she sees for the first time, and the music is great.
Where'd they learn to do that?
Where? I don't know. Kids are doing it in the basements back home. Want to try it? Come on, baby.
So she thinks she can dance.
Turns out she could.
We're talking with Murray Horowitz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Murray, we have to remember some of the people who we've lost from movies this past year. We mentioned earlier in the course of conversation, Blake Edwards, the Pink Panther movies. Days of Wine and Roses, uncharacteristically.
Very uncharacteristic movie of his, but he's an underrated filmmaker. I started to say screenwriter, but that too. And actually, when he died, Sammy Wasson was quoted a lot here on NPR and was written a great book about Blake Edwards, and not always my cup of tea, but certainly an underrated filmmaker.
Arthur Penn died this past year, director of The Miracle Worker, Night Moves, and this from 1967.
This here's Miss Bonnie Parker.
Glad to meet you.
I'm Clyde Barrow.
Clyde.
Nobody! We robbed banks.
And that movie changed a lot of things for a lot of people.
It really did. I mean, it's widely credited by a lot of critics as having ushered in this like sort of new era in American cinema. It was, and it's important to remember that Arthur Penn was like handpicked by Warren Beatty to direct that movie. It directed him in Mickey 1. And so he'd sort of started that revolution beforehand. And this may have had something to do with it, Neil. It occurs to me that Arthur Penn is one of the very last of the brilliant live television directors who used to direct things like Playhouse 90, who then went into the movies and did very, very well.
A few others, Jill Clayburgh, the actress, Tony Curtis, of course, a major Hollywood figure. We did a whole segment devoted to him earlier this year.
And an underrated actor, a great, great star. But if you start to total up the real masterpieces that he was in, I mean, he was in Some Like It Hot. He was in Spartacus. He was in The Sweet Smell of Success. And he was gorgeous.
There is also Patricia Neal, who smoldered her way to an Academy Award in Hud.
Right. And she was, again, an underrated actress, married to Roald Dahl. And that, as I recall, was an Oscar that came out of nowhere. Nobody expected her to win, but it's an extraordinary performance.
We also lost this year two longtime dramatic actors who found new voices and new audiences in comedy.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
Peter Graves is Captain Clarence Auver, and Leslie Nielsen is Dr. Barry Rumack from the 1980s Airplane.
And it's true. I grew up in the 1950s and 60s where you saw these guys in movies and on TV all the time. I mean, Leslie Nielsen was in Forbidden Planet, which is a certain kind of MGM
classic.
Masterpiece and
yep.
Classic. Version of The Tempest takes place on another world. Yet then all of a sudden they became these giant stars, Peter Graves too, in these parodies. And it just shows that the real great actors always have range.
June Havoc died this past year, not as well known as her sister perhaps.
But her sister was Gypsy Rose Lee, but she was a really good actress and a wonderful human being.
And Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper's another one who kind of changed things in the movies. You know, I mean, you think of him in, I think, some of those American International kind of B movies in the 50s. And then,
of course, Easy Rider.
Easy Rider. And then later a lot of TV work that
and
turned
back
people around.
Do a lot of T work. And we want to end by remembering an actress and a singer best known for, Cabin in the Sky and one song in particular.
And also a real activist. I mean, a woman who shone for all of America. America, who was courageous. People have no idea what she went through. And I think of all the people who passed away who have film credentials, Lena Horne was maybe the most important this year.
Murray, have a great holiday.
A great holiday to you, Neil. Merry Christmas.
Coming up, we'll begin a series looking back at 2010, what's changed for various groups. We'll talk with Esther J. Cepeda about what's different for Latinos. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Raining all the time, keeps raining all the time.